Welcome to the REI Mastermind Network, where host Jack Haas gathers amazing stories from leaders in real estate investing. In each episode, our guests will tell you what they're doing that works, what they've tried that failed, and best of all, you'll learn actionable steps to take your real estate investing to the next level. Now, here's Jack with another value-packed episode.
Chad King joins me, and you can find him on all of the socials under Chad King. I'm going to have some of those links in the show notes, but it's important to note that Chad has an event coming up on May 9th, 10th, and 11th. By the end of the show here, we should have that URL, and I'm going to make sure that is also in the show notes, so take advantage of that as they focus on commercial real estate. So Chad, this is going to be an interesting conversation because we're going to be talking about how you moved from flipping over 400 houses and found your way to commercial real estate.
Yeah, thanks. Awesome. I'm pumped to get into it, Jack.
So I first have to ask, like, more times than not, there seems to be quite the journey there from going from flipping houses to commercial real estate. What happened there?
So, you know, it's kind of I feel like it's somewhat of the natural blueprint that folks get into, you know, being a real estate. People say they're real estate investors when they're flipping houses, but in no way, shape, or form are you technically an investor because you've just made yourself a high-paying job. So, you know, when you're flipping houses, it's one of the best ways to make active income. But make no mistake, you know, you are on a hamster wheel, and when one flip closes, you have to go find the next one. So we built that business up, you know, closing one wholesale and flip after another, and ultimately, what it did was it created, number one, a big tax problem, right? Because that active income was taxed at a very high rate. And there was no residual. And number three, we had to keep doing it. Like, so the end of the year, in 1 year, we flipped, you know, 168 houses. And then, you know, comes December 31st, we got to go back out and do it all over again. It was a lot of marketing, we had 15 employees. So it was a lot. So we transitioned, you know, from that business into buying small multifamily apartments, created more residual, more passive side of things, and a lot more of the tax benefits that we were looking for. And more of the wealth, right? We talk commercial real estate, mostly associated with long-term wealth, net worth growth, stuff like that. So we moved into that sector, bought a little 14 unit was the first deal we bought. And then we bought a 21 unit and then a 27 unit. We did those with our own cash and then, you know, quickly tapped out our reserves for buying commercial real estate and started getting into syndications. So then we did some 506B syndications with some friends and family on some bigger deals and then got into, you know, 506C syndications with even, you know, larger networks. And then, yeah, just been building up ever since. We currently hold 120 million in assets under management, but we've been buying and selling for 7 years now. So we sold a lot of stuff in that 21, 22 boom, exited over half our portfolio during that little bull run. So we've been anywhere between, you know, 800 to 2000 units at any given time. I think we're sitting about 1200 doors right now.
So yeah, that's interesting. But you know, before we transition into the commercial side, there's a lot of people that they're seeing flip this house and all of those things on HGTV.
Yeah,
give some people a reality check there. What are they getting themselves into other than setting themselves up for another JOB?
You are getting, you know, flipping again. It's one of the best ways to make active income. But you have, especially right now, you better be careful and you better buy the deal right because you make money on the buy. And, you know, when people were flipping in 2000, since the last crash, since 2012, really, you know, I believe wholeheartedly, especially those last few years, people have been getting saved by the market appreciation. So they could have bought a bad deal, but because the market had appreciated so much, let's say between 2019 and 2022, they really bought a bad deal, but they got saved because the market got so pushed up, artificially inflated, right? And I would just say to those people getting in, flipping's a great way to make more money. You know, if you're stuck in a W-2 and you got a cap on your salary and there's no other way to make active income in your current role and you need to start looking for an exit route, flipping's a great way to do that. But it's very competitive space and you've got to buy the deals right. And, you know, you also got to know what you're getting into. Have good partners if you need them. If it's your first flip, you know, you need to partner with somebody that's got some experience, be willing to give up a good chunk of the deal just to have somebody walk you through your first one. Because if you buy a bad one out of the gate, like it can really put you behind the eight ball. So stress test your numbers, and make sure your numbers make sense, even on worst case scenario figures. And if that's the case, then I would move forward and do the deal.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting your evolution here as you moved into the commercial space. You started with the small multifamilies. I think that's, like you had mentioned earlier, that's kind of aspirational. That's where people eventually kind of move into naturally. How quickly did you move from the smaller multifamilies into doing those syndications?
It moved pretty fast because it was more of it was a domino effect, right? And I think while I was flipping houses, I knew I wanted to get into commercials. So I was underwriting deals in the evenings. I was walking properties on the weekends. At the time, I didn't have any children. So I was literally just gung-ho on real estate. So I had spent a couple years like getting my feet under me from an education standpoint on the commercial side while I was doing the single family stuff. So that when I bought my first deal, like after that, I mean, the 21 unit came probably 2 months after the first one. And then the 27 was a couple months after that. And then we quickly moved into the syndications because we had, you know, a lot of people that were, our network was really a lot of flippers across the country, and all of them had the same problem. So we very quickly were able to pool, you know, a few million bucks together to start buying some bigger deals. And it was a natural progression. It happened very fast. The first deal I bought was in 2017. And, you know, within, well, we were, you know, 6-7 years, we've gotten to over 1200 doors right now. So it happened pretty quick, but you know, it's all relative, right? Knowing what I know now, I could have done it twice as fast, but it did happen relatively quickly.
Well, one of those things that you just pointed out, I always find it interesting how that you said the dominoes started to fall. It's always that first deal, whether it's that first flip, fix and flip, it's that first multifamily, it's that first event. And then I almost think it's something in our brain that like triggers that went, you know, crap, this is actually possible. Works. And then things start to roll. Is that what you would experience?
100%. You know, it is. That is like, it's the law of the universe. There are those laws out there that we can't see, feel, or touch, but they're real. And that's one of them. It's the moment, the law of momentum, the domino effect. It's a real thing. You spend, and far too many people quit before they knock that first domino over, because it does take a lot longer than people think, especially in the commercial side. Single family, if you're getting into flipping, you know, you can get a deal in the first, you know, 90 days if you really start to do a ton of activity. But the commercial side, in my experience, takes a whole lot longer to get to knock that first domino down. And I see a lot of people, they throw in the towel, you know, way, way too early, don't give themselves enough time to even get that first one knocked down. But after you do it, you know, the momentum is real. The snowball effect is real.
Well, we talk about the dominoes and how they start to fall down, but there's that process of setting those dominoes up before you can even push that first one over. Mm. You spent a lot of time ahead of time studying, researching, understanding the commercial real estate numbers before you pulled the trigger. Can you talk a little bit about the importance of that?
Yeah. Well, especially right now, because again, like I said, you're not going to get saved buying a bad deal. So not right now. The education piece is far more important than anything else. And I always the first thing I did was I got a mentor. Like when I got serious, I did some of self-education, the podcast, the books, right? But at the end of the day, you know, I'm an experienced person. I learn from doing. So you can watch 1,000 hours of YouTube videos, but I guarantee you, you're going to learn more from putting one deal under contract than you would from, and I know we're on a podcast and these are important to listen to these, right? But you are going to learn more from going out and completing a transaction. Even if you put something under contract and do the due diligence and end up not closing it, you're going to learn more from that 30 days than you would from 1,000 hours of videos. So the education is super important. Getting a mentor is extremely important because it's not just about the guidance on the first deal that you do. It's about maybe all the deals that you shouldn't be doing that you don't know what you're missing. So little fun fact, I had 3 deals under contract that I walked away from before I ended up closing that first 14 unit. And the only reason I knew what to look for and to walk away from was because I had a mentor and a coach that basically said, you missed this, you missed this, and you missed this, right? And I was able to say, oh my gosh, you know, and had I closed those properties, I would have been far, much further behind than I am now because I would have been kind of battling uphill and I would have started behind the eight ball. So education is important. Having a mentor is important. Having a coach and someone who can help you avoid potholes because you can pay for their experience. Like right now, you can you can pay to accelerate all of the trials, tribulations, errors, mistakes, and everything that I've made over the last 7 years in commercial real estate. You can pay to get all that experience immediately and avoid those same mistakes. So you pay for speed and you pay for experience. Otherwise, you're going to pay the price the other way, which is not fun.
Was there ever a point where you saw mentorship and the type of training you're talking about as an expense instead of an investment? And if so, what did you have to go through in order to get over that mental hurdle?
Yeah, I think, you know, I had a money mindset from very early on. It led me to get a couple of degrees in finance and accounting, thinking that that would teach me how to be wealthy. But I've always looked at money, always been curious about it. I've always been curious how it works. And every dollar that I spend, I look at as an investment. So I don't ever look at, if I'm going to spend money on something, it goes into one of two categories. It's either an asset or a liability. And I'm very, very bullish on buying assets. And you can come check me out. I have holes in the bottom of my socks because I won't buy a pair of socks because they're liabilities. They don't cash flow. And my wife makes fun of me because I'm worth a few million bucks. And like, I won't buy new socks because I just can't bring myself to spend money on liabilities. If the money doesn't go into myself, my businesses, or cash flowing assets or hard assets, I don't buy it. And that's the order that I invest in. Me first, then our businesses, and then cash flow and assets. And then the cash flow from the assets, I'm comfortable buying liabilities with. When the assets start to produce passive income, truly passive income, a lot of people mistake what, like they're thinking active is actually passive, truly passive income, mailbox money, then you can go spend that money on liabilities. But money and time are both your, you know, time is your greatest asset. So a coach is the biggest investment you can make. And it's certainly not an expense. If you look at it that way, I mean, it's the same way you look at it. If you look at employees that way, you're going to be way behind because employees are an investment to get your time back, to get your energy back. Coaching and mentorship is an investment to get your time back, all that stuff. It's all about time.
Yeah, we keep talking about financial freedom. I keep trying to remind people that what we're actually trying to achieve is getting our time back or getting our time freedom. Mm-hmm. And the only way that's going to happen is if you adopt some of these things, including mentorship and finding the necessary help in places that you might be lacking. So you're now fully into commercial. You don't do any flipping anymore?
No.
So what I also find interesting when it comes to commercial properties is the ability, it seems like the people that you work, it's a different seller in those markets is what I'm trying to get at. And it's easier to bring up the concept of seller financing. Like they're more open to it than somebody who's trying to sell a family home.
Correct. Yeah. You know, the biggest thing that I noticed moving from single family to commercial real estate, the biggest thing that I noticed was the sellers and the owners are much more logical and less emotional. So from a sales perspective, right, you're buying a single family home. A lot of times that's their biggest asset. That's their home. They have a lot of emotions tied in that. Some people have been there for 20, 30 years. So you have to have more of the Dr. Phil approach if you're going to be the one that buys their house, right? You have to sit down and understand who they are, their story, what this house means to them, why they want to leave, like all that stuff. You come over to commercial real estate, we're all very logical. Numbers driven, it's got to make sense fiscally. Show me the numbers. Like, that's it. I always say, don't fall in love with the property, fall in love with the spreadsheet. And from a lot of the owners that I've talked to in this space, because we do a lot of direct to seller stuff in my sector, and a lot of the owners are very similar. They're just make it make sense on paper. If the numbers pencil, then they do the deal. Everybody's pretty much non-emotional to the property right now. And that allows you to do a couple things. If you can find the right avatar, you know, that allows you to position some owner financing deals together, which right now with interest rates, treasury was, you know, at 4.2 today. So interest rates are hovering between 6% and 8%, depending if you go agency or community bank debt. So if you can get some owners to hold some paper for you, especially because banks are really tightening up their underwriting on their leverage and everything like that, then you can put some deals together that may not have been possible just with traditional financing in place. And owners are much more willing to have those conversations, especially because, you know, if they sell the property, you're creating another you're creating a problem for them. Now they have a big tax, capital gains tax liability. A lot of times they have to go redeploy that money into somewhere else that is going to continue to outpace inflation. And a lot of them don't have that alternative because they don't want to go buy another overpriced deal in the market. And so we always make, I call it the ABC offer, but we usually always make about three offers when we do offer on a commercial real estate property. And A is a typical offer. B, they hold some sort of first position debt. And C, they usually hold some sort of second position lien behind a bank loan because we can leverage their capital versus going out and raising money at 15 or 18% average annual return. You know, we always shoot for a 14 to 15% IRR. So I can get their money a lot cheaper than I can go get my investors' money. So I'm trying to leverage their equity in their property to help me get the deal across the finish line. That makes sense. I don't want to go too deep on owner finance, but that makes sense.
No, it does make sense. We used to do something that's like a three option letter of intent where we would give them something similar, but on the residential side of things. So, you know, it's kind of interesting how that works because when you give them three options, sometimes it sounds like in the commercial world, it's not as obvious, but saying no sometimes is still a fourth option. But when you give people three options, they'll sometimes pick one of those three that's in front of them.
Yeah.
Just to remind everybody, if you like what we're talking about so far, do us a quick favor and share this episode with one of your investor friends. If you're watching us on YouTube, give us a quick like and a subscribe. And Chad, did you happen to get that URL yet for the event?
Hold on.
I'm going to make sure to have those links, including Chad's social links, in the show notes. But Chad has an event coming up on May 9th, 10th, and 11th that you might want to take advantage of. Is that going to be in Tennessee, Chad?
It's a virtual event.
Oh, it's a virtual event.
Yeah,
from the comfort of everybody's own home.
That's correct. And it is, I just put it in the chat. Also, I want to just say it's not like a 3-day Zoom meeting. Like it's a virtual experience. We actually fly out to a studio in South Carolina. The hosts that are going to run it, it's me and my business partners. We'll fly out to a studio and it's a virtual experience, right? It's very interactive. It's not like you're just sitting on a Zoom meeting for 3 days. So I just put the link in the chat. I recommend you guys checking it out. If you want to learn more about multifamily real estate, commercial real estate, how to buy deals right now, we're under contract on $42 million closing in the next 60 days. So we're actively buying despite everything going on. There are deals to be had. There are deals in the market. If you know where to look and if you know how to underwrite, there are good deals still out there and they're getting across the finish line right now. And I'm Fannie Mae loans. I'm under 6% right now too. So the drop in the treasury in the last 90 days has really helped. So there's deals to be had.
So it is multifamilyliveevent.com. That's a great URL, easy to remember. Multifamilyliveevent.com. And we will have that again at the end of the episode, but that's definitely something to check out.
Yes.
So Chad, with all of that, I'd be curious then, you know, you're negotiating with some pretty sizable commercial real estates. You've mentioned multifamily, self-storage, mobile home parks. Your specialization around all of this is finding some of these off-market and negotiating with the seller. Yes. Can you talk a little bit about that process? Like, let's start with finding the property.
Sure. So we go about 50-50. So 50% of our deals come from the top commercial real estate brokers, and it's the 80-20 rule, right? 80% of the business is being done by 20% of the brokers. So there's a top echelon of commercial real estate brokers. 50% of our deals come from that echelon, and the other 50% comes from our direct-to-seller marketing. So we'll pull lists of commercial real estate owners, and then we have a cadence that we like to do, and some text messages we send, some letters, and some other things that we send on a certain cadence that basically get us in the door. And what I tell, you know, my director of acquisitions is always like, set an appointment, right? This is not a one call close business where you can, you know, get on the phone with a commercial real estate owner and by the end of the phone call, you guys are, you know, working a deal. You can get to that point where you're talking numbers, but I always say we got to get in front of these folks. Same thing with the brokers, especially the avatar that we're going after. They're people, they want to see a face. They want to know who's behind the deal, because in commercial real estate, it's a lot more about credibility and reputation to be able to close in order to be the one that gets awarded the deal. So you got to do what you say you're going to do. You got to have high integrity. And these commercial real estate owners, they can feel that, you know, and I recommend that you get in front of people, you learn a little bit of sales skills and tactics from a negotiation standpoint, understanding how to ask great questions, how to uncover, you know, potential motivating factors, how to remove objections prior to any close, just standard basic sales stuff, how to listen twice as much as you talk. And if you can employ some basic principles of sales and then also have a basic understanding of numbers and how the numbers will work on a deal, you can negotiate these deals direct to seller as well. So we reach out to the sellers and then try and set meetings and give them an offer from there.
Do you have any suggested resources? Let's say somebody is trying to get into something like this and they just don't have a lot of sales experience. Where should they start to get their feet under them?
I worked for Xerox out of college and I sold copiers door to door. That's when I left college. That was the first job I took, commission only, and just basically knocking on doors until you found one. So the Xerox had a phenomenal sales training, but I learned a lot more from books after Xerox than I did actually in the sales training there. And mainly, you know, I'll drop a few here, but Chris Voss has a book called Never Split the Difference, which is a great, great sales book to read. Anything by Jeb Blunt is very good. Sales EQ. Oren Claff has a book called Pitch Anything, and he has another one. The name is escaping me, but Oren Claff has a couple really good books on sales. So if you pick up those Jeb Blunt books, you pick up the Oren Claff books, you read Never Split the Difference. Those have some very basic principles that I use on almost every sales call that I'm on. And I would also say that just be authentic to yourself, be who you are. You can't really ever sound like somebody else, but what you can do is you can take the principles that are prevalent in those books and you'll see common themes among them. And you can take those principles that are prevalent in those books and then you can apply your own authentic nature to it, like how you are and how you operate, and then start to really hone in on your sales process. The other thing is you got to get reps, right? So if you're scared of cold calling, pick up the phone. And if you're worried about falling flat on your face, go fall flat on your face and then figure out what you did wrong and go from there. So you got to get some reps in because all those books are great and you'll get all the principles, but until you start practicing them, they're not going to really get burned into your subconscious so that you can do them, you know, lights out anytime. So those are some good books I recommend. Basically, just get started tuning up your sales game.
So you're doing multifamily, the self-storage, the mobile home parks. What is your process in deciding what to go after next?
What deal to go after?
Yeah, because you know you're pretty diversified here, especially in the in the commercial space.
Yeah.
You went from multifamily. What was your next step? Did you go to self-storage?
Mobile home parks was step two, and then self-storage step three. We have a couple office buildings. I have other cash flowing businesses too. We own a HVAC and plumbing company. We're vertically integrated with an insurance company. We do some of our own property management on our smaller stuff too. And you know, that sounds like a lot, but let me just demystify this whole thing for you. Commercial real estate is a business. You create an LLC, that LLC owns a property. The business just happens to be the real estate, but it has income, it has expenses, and it has net income. And then you put some debt and some leverage on it. You got to make sure that income covers. So whether it's a HVAC company, whether it's a property management company, whether any kind of business, that's all these are. They're businesses. You know, you just happen to be renting out property, but it's got your top line gross revenue that you collect from your rent. And then it's got all your expenses, your landscaping, your general and admin, your property management fee, your taxes, your insurance. And then you got a net income line. Below that net income line, you have your mortgage payment, your debt service. And as long as you can cover your debt service, we call it a DSCR. But as long as you're covering it a 1.25, you know, that deal will pass bank standards. And if you're covering it a 1.5 DSCR, that deal's pretty healthy. So we stress test the heck out of our deals. But just to sort of demystify the whole thing is once you understand that it's just a business and it's a piece of paper that owns this real estate. And as long as that business is profitable, then you're going to be in a good spot. And you take care of your property and you take care of your tenants. You take care of your tenants will take care of the property, your property will take care of your investors, and your investors will take care of you. That's my motto. So we focus on buying good places, creating good places to live, and we take care of the properties. And it's just like a business. You take care of your business. You reinvest in your business. You don't run it like a slum where you're trying to shave expenses every sort of way. I mean, there's time and place to do that, but you run it well and the business will take care of you. So it's just to demystify it. It really is just a business that you need to run and optimize the net income.
Mm-hmm. Well, with...
It's like we're still recording, but I lost Jack.
Oh, so with all of that, do you have any what do you think of the economic outlook of everything right now? You've already brought up the Treasury a couple times.
Mm. How far out do you want? Do you want the next 12 months, the next 5 years? Like, what do you, because there's a lot to unpack. The question is very loaded.
Yeah. Well, let's just talk about this next 12 months.
The next 12 months, I think, are going to be pretty turbulent from a socioeconomic standpoint. You know, we were talking before the show, you know, the politics that are going on, number one, obviously, are absolutely nuts. But it's tough to ignore, because if you're in real estate, it directly affects kind of how we have to operate day to day. You mean, you just take bonus depreciation for an example, right? It's gone from 100% to 80 to 60. It directly affects how much losses we're getting. Take the Fed and the interest rates, for example. The bullshit that's going on in DC directly affects how the Fed responds to raising rates with the inflation and their inflationary measures. So you kind of have to pay attention to what's going on. As far as an outlook, I feel like everybody's kind of on pins and needles. Raising capital has been a lot harder in these last 12 months, and I think will continue to be very difficult for the next 12 months. Finding good deals that pencil has never been harder, because the rates are higher, but people still want the same cap rates and the same values that they had in 2022. But we've seen commercial real estate lose probably 30% of its value in some markets. So sellers are still trying to command old prices, you know, and they're trying to sell 4 caps in a 7% interest rate environment, and that just doesn't work. So there's a great standoff going on there. I do think the Fed is going to lower rates. They've said maybe 25 basis points, maybe 50 if we're lucky basis points this year. However, you know, I don't think they're going to be lowering the rates more than 25 basis points. The sentiment that I've heard from some of my other folks that have, you know, I've heard survive until 25, and hopefully they're going to start to drop rates. I don't think we'll ever get to back to like a 2.9. People are locking in like 2.9% mortgages. I don't know if we'll ever get back there. I think too much money currency has been pushed into the market. I do believe that they will pull back on rates, especially if a Republican gets into office. I think they'll be more bullish on pulling back on rates. If a Democrat gets in office again, I think this thing could potentially go to like 1980s type interest rates, where we're creeping into the double digits, and there'll be some blood in the streets, because I'm seeing distress right now. So I'm seeing people that, you know, bought on bridge 24 months ago, didn't expect the rate hikes that we saw in 2022, 2023, and now they have these maturity dates and these refis, and their values are 30, 40% lower than what they projected. And they're having to do cash in refis, meaning having to bring money to the table in order to get into a new loan product, which sting very bad. And I'm seeing that now. We're going to see more of it. We're going to see a lot more of it in the next 12 months. Depending on what happens in November, I think is going to be it's going to be a very interesting time over the next 12 months. And don't sit on that doesn't mean sit on the sidelines. It means you should be in the game, but you should be a cautious operator. You know, right now we're stress testing the absolute heck out of our deals. No rent increases. I'm seeing rent suppression in a lot of places. We have a property in Davidson County right outside of Nashville, Tennessee, and there's been so much absorption in the last 2 years. We've had 25,000 units 2 years ago and 19,000 units last year absorb into the market. And those places were at $2,400 a month rent price points. Now, in order to achieve occupancy rates, they're giving 3 or 4 months concessions, which means their effective rent is only like $1,700. So we're seeing rent, and I've had to drop my rates almost $300 a unit just to keep up and stay occupied in that market. So, and that's in Nashville. Like, we're seeing rent concessions all over the place. Class A offices going back to the banks like hotcakes. I mean, it's a fun time to be in the game. 25 basis point rate cuts coming this year. 2025 will be a lot better, especially if, I mean, it looks like it's going to be Trump Biden. I can't believe we're literally singing the same song and dance after all these years. We can't find two better people freaking run this thing, but it is what it is, right? So we got to play in the game at a high level, because it's going to be shitty either way, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah. It's pretty shocking how things are playing out.
Yeah.
And, but I would imagine then, you know, you said there could be blood in the streets, but frankly, based on what I've seen, especially in the commercial space, we're already starting to see blood in the water with some of the things that are going on, and there's opportunities to be had, especially if you have banks that are willing to cooperate or negotiate with.
Yeah. Well, and you also need to have banking relationships in your back pocket too, because, you know, there's a lot of banks that have closed up shop to new customers entirely. And, you know, especially everybody's really shoring up their real estate portfolios. I've got banks that I've got, you know, tens of millions of dollars of loans with that are not loaning on any commercial stuff. And they're basically just, you know, holding tight on their current stuff that they have out. I've got banks that they won't even look at a deal from a new borrower. So you have to start talking to banks now. And if you're going to get into commercial real estate and start seeing which ones have an appetite for your market, you know, because it's not just Fannie Freddie, right? You have to find your community banks and your credit unions that are lending on commercial real estate and start to get in with those people. Get your personal financial statement dialed, your statement of real estate owned, start to get your package into the banks and find out the ones that are still bullish on lending so that if you do find a deal, you can fund it. Like you can get it across the finish line. Because the worst thing in the world would be if a deal falls in your lap that's a home run and you're starting from scratch and no bank wants to touch you, even though the deal is really good. And that may be the case.
But Chad, we've been told time and time again that you find the deal and the money will come.
Yeah. We'll do that. It's not just going to come out of the woodwork.
That is the song and dance that I've heard more gurus say than anything else.
I kind of, believe it or not, I used to say that. And the more that I've matured, the more that I've learned that expression is BS. Because if you're in my sector and you're raising capital for deals and you wait till you get something under contract to start the process of raising money, you're done. You're not going to do it. You have to be raising capital simultaneously while you're looking for deals so that by the time you find one, you have an investor base that is primed and knows what you've been doing and knows what you've been up to so that you're not calling them saying, you're not cold calling them basically now and saying like, I'm closing a deal in 60 days. Do you want to be a part of it? No, that you've had a relationship for 12 or 24 months saying like, hey, this is what I'm looking for. When I find one, you're going to be ready to go. You got to be raising capital now and you got to be building relationships with banks now. I mean, if you find an amazing deal, like an absolute unicorn, then maybe that's the case, but you better have some money relationships before you get something under contract. Because if you're starting from scratch, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, I can't agree more, Chad. And you're adding to a verse to my song that I keep singing over and over and over again. You got to spend as much time lining up your buyers, your cash, your financing as you are looking for that next property. It's as vital.
Yep. 100%.
So just to remind everybody, check out Chad's multifamilylive.com. That's coming up May 9th, 10th, and 11th. Take advantage of that event. And we'll also have all of the links for a few of his socials in the show notes. But Chad, before we switch into the rapid fire questions, is there a question or concept you think we should have tried to cover here today?
Ooh, that's a good question. No, I think we kind of hit the gambit. Well, we're 35 minutes in and we talked a lot about just the path to freedom and financial freedom. Listen, you're not going to do it at a W-2 job, and you know, you're not going to do it unless you can start to get your money to work for you. So you got to figure out how to stack cash and then begin to stack assets, particularly the ones that produce income. I also believe it's my fiduciary responsibility to pay the IRS as little as possible legally and ethically. So I'm trying to pay as little in taxes as possible legally while stacking as many hard assets to create freedom for myself and my family. Cause you know, fast forward, I want to be able to do what I want, when I want, with who I want, for however long I want, and not have to ask anybody permission for anything. And if you want that independent life, if you want that life that you're not reliant on a salary or somebody else or working for somebody else, like you got to start now, because this is a decade long thing. This is marathon that you're running, and you're not. A lot of people get into commercial real estate with the misnomer. They buy an apartment complex thinking they're going to close, and then all of a sudden checks are just going to be flying out of their ears and hitting their mailbox like crazy. And that's not how it works, especially if you're raising and using other people's money. I'm working for my investors for usually the first 36 months of ownership before it even starts to get fruitful for us. And it's a long game. So just have that patient mentality, you know, that farmer mentality. If you're getting into the real estate space, this is not get rich quick, specifically, you know, multifamily and commercial real estate. This is get wealthy for sure. And it's a long game that you're playing. So for anybody listening, just come into it with that marathon mentality of the consistent daily actions compounded over time or what's going to win. It's not going to be a get rich quick.
Well, Chad, are you ready? We're going to jump into the rapid fire.
Sure. What are we like? One word answers, basically?
No, whatever you feel comfortable with. Okay.
Go.
What lie do real estate investors tell themselves and sometimes to others?
What lie do real estate investors tell themselves sometimes to others? Real estate is easy.
Yeah.
It's simple, but it's very hard. Very competitive space.
So we probably already covered this, but do you have a book recommendation or what are you reading right now?
Just read Extreme Ownership again by Jocko Willink. One of the best books I've ever read.
Cool. If you could go back in time and give your younger self one piece of advice, what would it be?
I quit messing around and start buying commercial real estate, because if I was buying it in 2010, I'd be freaking a billionaire by now. So quit messing around and get in the game. Get in the game. Stop procrastinating.
And the last one, what single strategy, process, or tool have you implemented that has had the biggest time-saving impact?
What strategy, process, or tool have I implemented that has had the biggest impact on my life?
Life or, yeah, saving your time.
Hands down, about 9 years ago, I started journaling everything. Every night, I write down my day. The next day, I write down my critical tasks that I'm going to get done, which are the five things that are going to move the needle. And if I do those five things, that day is a win. And I try and win the day. That's all I try and do is chip away. And I try and wake up. And when I write down everything the night before, what I'm going to do, who I'm going to call, who needs to respond, like who do I need to respond to? What things do I need to do? What new business activity do I need to create? I write all that stuff down the night before so that I can just wake up that the next day and execute. I don't have to wake up and wonder what storms, because especially in my space, I know this is a little bit long-winded answer, but I'm passionate about this. In my space, like stuff is going to come up. Think curveballs happen every single day. And if you wake up without a plan, those curveballs are going to knock you off course. That your ship is just going to go way the other direction than you're supposed to go. And you're going to get to the end of the day and you're going to be like, oh my gosh, that day got away from me. But if you wake up with an exact plan of this is what I'm going to do, these are the activities that are going to determine if this day is a win. And you do those things and you get a little W for that day and you start stacking those W's, you're going to pick your head up in 90 days. You're going to be in a completely different place. And then you're going to pick your head up in 5 years and you're going to be a totally new human. Your life isn't going to even look the same. So my biggest thing is journaling and writing every single, and I save all my journals. I got boxes and boxes of my journals. And I look back sometimes 9 years ago and I used to write down my goals every night and what goals I wanted. And I used to look back and I laugh now because it was like, I own 20 units was one of my goals that I had. Right. And you just start building and building and building. And that has been the single greatest thing of writing things down has been the single greatest thing. And it seems simple, but mapping my day out the night before, I've been doing it for 9 years and I will never be able to stop.
It's kind of interesting to think about it too. You know, when you're long gone, your kids, that might be the most valuable thing you leave behind.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. That's very true to think about. Same thing with this podcast for you. I mean, you know, you think these things are going to live forever. This is your legacy being left. So I think that's pretty cool what you're doing too.
Well, Chad, this has been a fantastic conversation. There's so many tidbits there that I hope that people have found the value that I saw in having this conversation with you. I hope you'll consider coming back again sometime. Just talking about mindset on an episode, I think would be fantastic.
I think 100%, because that's where it all starts, Jack. I mean, we talk about commercial real estate all day long, but if you're not solid here and you don't have a good internal constitution and know who you are and know what you want out of life, it doesn't matter, you know, how much real estate you buy, because you're going to be miserable either way, because money doesn't make you happy, but what it allows you to do can make you happy if you're a solid human being and you have a good mindset. So I would love to come back and talk about that.
Remind everybody one last time, multifamilyliveevent.com, May 9th, 10th, and 11th. Take advantage of that, and we will see you next time. It was great meeting you, Chad.
Thanks, Jack. Appreciate the conversation. Pleasure.
Have you learned at least one actionable step to incorporate into your real estate investing? If so, please consider returning some of that value by leaving a positive review, subscribing to our YouTube channel, or joining our growing network on Facebook and Twitter. You can find links to all of our social media accounts in the show notes. See you next time.